special seminar for the Hellenic Observatory. I'm delighted to welcome you. We have a very good panel and title. The title, Rebooting the Greek Economy, How Greece Can Lift Growth, Employment, and Stabilize Public Debt. Just like that. So clearly, this is going to be an inspiring session, or we hope. And we have two excellent speakers to make the presentation. Our main speaker is Professor Nikos Christolakis. Nikos Christolakis is Professor of Economic Analysis at the Athens University of Economics and Business. More importantly, he's a visiting professor here at the Athens Hellenic Observatory. Of course, he has had a critical role in Minister of Finance between 2002-2004 in the early years of Greece's Eurozone membership. But of course, he's written extensively on macroeconomics, a number of books, How Crises Shaped Economic Ideas and Policies, The Greek Endgame from Austerity to Growth or Grexit, An Economic Analysis of Conflicts, and more recently, and relevant to tonight, is the book published this year, Rebooting the Greek Economy. So we're delighted to invite Nikos to present his ideas, and equally very pleased that Professor Manolis Galanianos, a professor of economics at Royal Holloway University of London, will be the respondent. Manolis is a good friend of the Hellenic Observatory. Before moving to London, he'd spent some years in the United States, Pennsylvania State University, New York University, Yale University, etc. And of course, Manolis has also written very extensively. So we're delighted to have the discussion. And I don't know whether you wish to speak from here or from there, but the presentation, you can speak from here. Nikos has agreed to speak for 35 minutes or so, and we'll then pass to Manolis for 10-15 minutes of response. So, can you first of all please join me in welcoming both of our speakers?
Thank you very much, Kevin, for your kind words. I'm very glad that I had the opportunity to be with you tonight for several reasons. First of all, because I had the opportunity to talk about policy issues in Greece, but also because for me, reminds me of a similar talk which I gave exactly 10 years ago in the same place. And it was just after the collapse of Lehman Brothers. And I had some underlying the risks and problems that the economy of Greece and perhaps the euro area as a whole might face very soon. At that time, I concentrated on the issue of between deficits, which for Greece were at devastating levels of between 15% and 20%. For example, in 2008, that was 10 years ago, the external deficit of the country was exceeding 15% of GDP. That was by far the highest in the world. And also the budget deficit was coming bigger and bigger, from about 10% in 2008 to much larger later on. And my talk at that time was that these explosive deficits are bound to create a very catastrophic threat for the economy of Greece and some others which were having similar problems, such as the Spanish economy, the Portuguese economy, the Irish economy, and so on. And in fact, after 2 years, we had this succession of memoranda in order to restore Greek finances. But if somebody looks at the development of these deficits, you can see that today we have left the abyss and we have arrived in a situation where actually these deficits, or some of them have become surpluses, by the way, and are in a much better position than several other European economies. So you might worry, I mean, why I'm here 10 years later on in order to talk about problems, since the main problems seem to be cured, actually. My talk is going to concentrate on some underlying problems, which I think are quite serious and very much threatening the prospects of the economy of Greece. We don't talk that much about these problems, especially these days, but I think that the erosion they cause to the economy of Greece is going to have lasting consequences. So in my talk, I'm going to describe three persistent problems, such as the problem with debt, which, as I'm going to show you, is not yet sustainable, about the loss of competitiveness and the deterioration of market function. In order to overcome these problems, I would suggest a different approach to policy making that includes much more focusing on growth by changing the policy mix of the excessive surpluses and also changing the social insurance contribution architecture as well as the architecture of taxes. And in this policy exercise, I'm going to show that the long-term effects are going to be beneficial in terms of employment, in terms of welfare, as well as regarding the sustainability of debt. And I'm going to show that this is the only way that such sustainability can be achieved. But first of all, let me remind you about the developments in debt over the past decade. In 2009, public debt was accumulating and had reached 127% of GDP, which produced this debt crisis. And after a few months, in early 2010, Greece entered the first memorandum in order to face the increasing debt and the crisis itself, also dubbed as the debt crisis of Greece and the Eurozone as a whole. So having a debt level of 127% of GDP, and this required three memoranda of fiscal consolidation, I mean, how many shall we need when our debt now is approaching 108% of GDP? I think that this is a very central question that every policymaker today avoids to see and avoids to answer. of course, I think that this problem did not appear immediately at a glance, but it has been growing up for a number of years. As a matter of fact, after the first memorandum, there had been quite a lot of optimism that the economy of Greece would recover very soon and eventually that would go lower and lower, reaching some sustainable levels. You can see that in the first sustainability analysis, which took place after the first memorandum, under normal assumptions, debt was expected to reach a level somewhere between 100% and 130% this year, without assuming that debt reduction is necessary to take place. And only under some extreme assumptions of shocks and a very heavy readjustment of accounting practices, public debt would reach the vicinity of 120 or 110%. Actually, today, public debt is around here. But also, after the Greece crisis in 2012, there was again a second wave of optimism to say that this reduction of debt will bring about more optimism about the future. Growth is going to rise, projected that this year debt would have been 143% of GDP instead of the 180 as it is. So I think that we see here a success here, failure, a repeated failure to predict the debt burden in the Greek economy. that was not the only one. Another theory which was central in the policies enacted by the memorandum was that the internal devaluation would immediately transform the exportability of the Greek economy. And that would be the mechanism that would feed the higher growth that Greece was needed, and in turn this higher growth would dissipate the debt burden over time. But as you see from this diagram, although the exports in Greece were more or less evolving at a similar rate before the crisis, after the crisis and the implementation of the memoranda, they grew very, very slowly, and it was only in the last couple of years that they have picked up a bit, mainly due to tourism. So actually, Greece remains quite far from being from having an export-led growth, despite the huge reduction of wages, especially in the private sector. Finally, there has been a lot of discussion, a very passionate discussion, about the need of reform in the economy of Greece, because it was sluggish, outdated, all the things. And in fact, Greece managed to become a reform champion among the OECD countries, achieving the highest rate of reform efforts among the European countries and some other countries as well. But despite this reform effort, the ranking of the economy of Greece has deteriorated over the last few years. So nobody believes that the Greek economy currently is competitive enough to go there and invest or to take it, to lend the economy of Greece in, and be seriously engaged with it. So I think that this is the third front of failure. I think that the lack of growth over the last years pushed the debt to levels which are not sustainable, as I said before. But not only that, it made the Greek debt to acquire two particular characteristics. One which is going to be negative in the future, the other which is ambivalent. This is the composition of the current composition of Greek debt. Out of 315 billion euros, the majority of Greek debt now has been borrowed by the official sector of the European of the euro area, and a large part of it actually is owned by foreigners, including the institutional sector, which means that debt payments in the future will move resources from Greece, from the economy of Greece, to other economies. And I think that this is going to have some very negative consequences regarding liquidity and investment financing in the years to come. Despite these characteristics, the European institutions appear again for a third time optimistic about the prospects of stabilizing Greek debt. And in the debt sustainability analysis that was published a few months ago, they seem to admit that despite the low growth which is going to prevail in Greece in the coming years, if Greece manages to realize high primary surpluses, it will be possible to stabilize debt if a generous profiling takes place for the official debt. In fact, this generous profiling has taken place in the Eurogroup of June 2018, and this made some maneuvering easier for a number of years until about 2030. But 25% until 2022, and quite high after quarter, but it will move between 2 and 2.5% of the GDP for the years after. Just in order to give you a measure of comparison, I would like to tell you that the average primary surplus in the euro area as a whole is less than 1% this year. So this means that Greece has to do an extreme fiscal effort for many years in order to be able to stabilize and to stabilize it and make it sustainable. Under these assumptions, and assuming that everything is going to take place smoothly and accurately, debt is going to remain above 100% even in 2040, which of course is going to be a source of concern, of continuous concern. But the official sector of the euro area is prepared to neglect perhaps this problem. There's another index which has to be taken into account as well, which is the gross financial needs that the country has to finance every year. And this includes interest payments plus any sort of refinancing of debt. And a level which is about 50% of GDP is considered to be alarming for an economy in the euro area, because such a low figure could probably be achieved after the year 2030. They changed the criteria, and in the last Eurogroup they said that, well, it doesn't matter, I mean, 50% is a conservative criterion. We can tolerate GFX, the gross financial needs, to reach something like 20% with no problem. And you see that this particular factor is going to exceed even the 20% under the optimistic assumptions which are made in the sustainability analysis. Now, what I'm going to tell you is that even this picture which we see here is not going to be realistic, because everything has been calculated on the assumption that policy goes smoothly, every target is achieved in the prescribed timelines for these type of things. In order to make my point clear, I'm going to use the dynamic accumulation of debt, which says that debt as a percentage of GDP in every period depends on the interest rate, on the growth rate, the primary fiscal surplus which is achieved, the proceeds from privatization which are used in order to buy back debt, and this FT is the gross financial needs that the country has to collect every year. Now, instead of assuming that everything will run smoothly and accurately in a perfect world, I think it's far more logical and reasonable to assume that there will be some shocks in the economy. And if you make this type of sustainability analysis under the so-called stochastic simulation, with noise and with shocks hitting both the economy of Greece and the world economy, perhaps, you take a very different picture. For example, if we assume that growth rate may have a standard deviation of 2%, which is just below the historical levels, we assume that inflation rate may have a deviation of 1% per year over a number of years, and that the primary surplus targets may not be met with such accuracy as foreseen in the group agreements, then we can take some different type of outcomes. Add to that the interest rate at which the government, the Greek government hopes to borrow from international markets may vary according to money availability worldwide, plus of course a risk premium which is going to vary one sees that the economy is in a recession again, may not be so willing to go and buy some big assets because the market makes these type of things. So if you compile all these assumptions, if you obtain a stochastic simulation of the evolution of debt, which I think is more realistic than the naive deterministic paths which are now suggested by the European Union. So if you make this study, which can be performed in an Excel sheet, it's very simple, you can see that public debt over time may vary between some limits. And you see that in 2030, for example, public debt may be slightly above 100%, maybe below 100%, or maybe substantially above 100%, depending on the kind of shocks and the combination of shocks that are going to impinge on the economy of Greece. The problem is that future lenders rely on their cost calculations in diagrams like this. So if they see that there is a large variability in future debt, they increase the yield which they require in order to follow the Republic of Greece. And you see that under these assumptions, it's very hard to believe that Greek debt is going to be sustainable. The same team picture is obtained for the gross financial needs, because this is the central scenario which has been envisaged by the European institutions, and I showed you before numbers. If everything goes smoothly, gross financial needs are more or less going to remain below 20%, which is tolerable, let's say. Okay. But if shocks impinge upon the economy, then gross financial needs, if shocks are good, adventures that are going to come below, but they may go quite upwards, which actually may instill a sense of unsustainable big debt, and this could have very severe and negative repercussions on pricing. Why is this happening? It's very important to see that this balance within which gross financial needs or debt is going to find itself with a probability 95% are explosive, which means that as time passes, I mean, investors may feel that the big debt will become more unmanageable, not less manageable. Why is this? If you do some very simple statistical analysis, you can calculate values of debt in the future, which is given by this dynamic equation, and this depends on the variance of debt in the previous period multiplied by a factor which is given by this. So you can, without too much math, so you can see that if this expression gamma is mu and mu are positive, then this creates this exclusivity in the development of debt. And if you make the analysis, you see that this happens if you have average growth to be below the average real interest rate. Is this the case for the Greek economy? I'm afraid yes, because the growth which is projected for the economy of Greece over the next decade is just around 1%, 1.5%, 1.7%, but it's going to be definitely lower than the real rate of interest for many years to come. Which means that this is quite a likely scenario, but at least far more likely to get the optimistic version which we showed before. And it's only when the average growth substantially exceeds the average real interest rate that we make this debt profile and the gross financial needs profile more manageable. But how can this be achieved? Well, the proposal which I made is that we have to change the policy mix. Now the Greek economy is obliged to accumulate 3.5% as primary surplus. I think that sooner or later everybody will realize that instead of that, let's go back to reality and say that we shall accumulate the primary surplus 1.5% of GDP, which is slightly higher than the European average, which is acceptable, say it's feasible, and then devote the remaining fiscal space of 2% to public investment or to help enterprises to raise their competitiveness or affordability or to all these type of things. If we do that systematically and for the same number of years, then one can see that instead of the low growth, which is envisaged in the long term for the economy of Greece to be about 1 or 1.5%, we can have a higher growth that eventually will reach 4%. Something which is not unreasonable given the very low state of the economy of Greece now and the fact that in the past Greece has achieved even higher growth rates for a long period of time. Well, of course, this has a number of conditions to be met, like, for example, the systematic allocation of resources to investment projects and all these type of things. But perhaps the solution would be that European authorities can undertake this to supervise the allocation of resources in order to achieve a higher growth in the years to come. Now, the crucial result is that if you do this policy shift from primary fiscal surpluses to investment injection to the tune of 2% per year, then the profile of the changes and the balance become narrower. And you can see that within another short period of time, the statistical inference is that debt will fall below 100% by year to 2030. And the financial needs, the gross financial needs, are systematically kept below 20%. And I think that this picture, this profile, is a lot more persuasive regarding the sustainability of the debt. In order to achieve that, the crucial factor was to change the growth rate. And you don't have too many ways to do it. There's only one instrument. I mean, reallocate public money instead of this money going abroad in order to repay debt. Just try to concentrate on some on a new way of investment projects which will give high returns and will stimulate the economy. Even if this takes place, things are not good enough for everything, because this policy change only guarantees the sustainability of Greek debt as a ratio to GDP. There are other problems which still prevail in the economy of Greece, because the long-term structural factors are very bleak. And the two most crucial is that we have a serious population decline. Population is expected to fall in year 2016 to around 8 million, more or less the same population as we had in 1960. And even worse is the case with the working age population, which is falling fast as well. It makes Greek society not only more sparsely populated, but also aged as well. And of course, someone has to think what can be done about that. I'm afraid that instruments, policy instruments, are very few. Either we have to change something in a very radical way in the labor market, or we have to think in very serious terms about inflation in order to change this sharply declining population pattern. Okay, in order to answer this, I'm going to suggest two policy changes. One of them regards reducing the social insurance contributions, which now have created a lot of problems and counter incentives, especially the young increase the amount of taxes and even more pays high social insurance contributions in order to finance the pension of the elderly, a pension which is very likely that he receives when becomes of their age. So we have a very serious intergenerational problem in Greece. How we can fix it? By playing with numbers and to try to give that incentives to the younger generation. But also, there is an issue of political economic deficit as well. Greece now is having one of the highest social insurance contribution rates in the Eurozone. But let's fix it. I mean, in average, the Eurozone countries collect something like 13% of their GDP through insurance contribution. Greece with much higher coefficients, much higher rates, collects a lot less, about 2%, despite some improvements which have taken place recently. So I think that this suggests to economists that there might be some Lafferkin effects, because rates have gone up too much, and this has increased incentives for evading proper labor, very proper employment. Thus, despite the existence of high rates, revenues no longer. So I decided to make an econometric evaluation of this possible Lafferkin effect in the euro area. And I estimated an equation where the social insurance revenues depend on social insurance rates in a non-linear way. And this actually has shown that there is a Lafferkin effect in some economies of the euro area, including Greece. This suggests that if we lower the social insurance rate, we may increase employment, legal employment, official employment, by cutting the incentives to evade employment declaration. So actually, I estimated two equations. One equation which shows how participation ratio depends on the growth rate, as normal economic theory says, but also how it depends on the past values, and then that the employment rate, how it depends not only on growth and past values, but also from the social insurance contribution rates. And again, a model which I estimated in all euro area countries showed that this effect is existing, is statistically serious, and therefore this allows me to suggest that a reduction in the social insurance contribution rates may increase employment. So I describe a mechanism in which by cutting social insurance rates, this increases registered employment. This reduces unemployment rate, the unemployment rate. And at the same time, by increasing the number of employees, revenues increase despite the fact that the coefficient on social insurance contribution is reduced. Of course, this has to be tested econometrically, and I did that by suggesting a cut in the employees' social insurance contribution from 6.67%, which is today to zero, at a modest reduction in the employer's social insurance contribution. All in all, this amounts to cutting total social insurance contribution rates from 34%, where it stands today, to 26%. Even to that, and we take the elasticities which were estimated in the previous question, you can obtain a number of scenarios how the Greek economy is likely to evolve in the future. You see here three is the black line, which is the scenario without reforms, which has been published by the European Union and the Greek government last year, which shows that in the long run, employment is going to decrease following the decline in the population. Then, by introducing only the higher growth, which I described before, we have an increase in employment, but then this gradually reaches the official projection. But if you introduce both the fiscal reallocation of resources to investment and the cut in social rate contributions, they may end up with higher employment by up to 400,000 people at the end. And by doing this, unemployment, which otherwise is bound to remain high at the level of close to 50% for many years, it may come below 10%, which more or less goes to the historical level before the crisis. Of course, if anybody of you likes to see in details of this econometric estimations forecast, let me know. As I said, with the world model to play with other assumptions as well. Finally, I'd like to add some analysis of the tax system, which I think is an essential counterpart of the previous policy changes. Why? As a matter of fact, the tax policy which has been followed over the recent years have managed to achieve the tax revenues as a whole have converged to the European average, more or less. But the problem with the economy of Greece is that not every sector and every type of tax revenues has converged in a similar way. So there are still big asymmetries. This is the convergence of the total tax revenues which are collected in Greece. But if you go to particular areas, you see that Greece may still lag behind. As for example, in the direct taxation, Greece is lagging behind the European average. We overdo it in direct taxation, which hits the average consumer a lot harder. And also, we overshoot the property tax. The European average, actually, we were close to Portugal, but then we reduced a bit. So there are all these type of facilities. In order to improve this, we suggest a tax simplification on rates, both on income tax, self-employment tax and corporate tax, assuming that the threshold of tax allowance increases as it is planned today to 9,600 euros per person. On that assumption, we suggest that the corporate tax rate may get reduced to 20%. From 29, where it is now, the personal tax rate can fall to 20% until an income of 40,000, and then gradually rise to 10% for the next bracket. The self-employment income tax rate remains at 20% and then rises to 30% for higher income brackets. And we introduce two VAT rates, a standard one at 20% and a lower one at 10%. And we abolish the 30% rate. If we do all these changes, we have simulated the effect on revenues. And we found that taking into account the reductions in the social insurance rate, we can produce a balance is the cost of and the outcomes of the forms. And this is a number of compensatory measures. For example, if the threshold rises, it's going to bring about 2.2 billion euros extra tax revenues. The evade reform, despite the simplification, is going to bring 1 billion dividends, etc., which are taxed at 20%, etc., etc., are going to bring some extra revenues, which then it has to be adjusted by the cutting corporate tax rate of 700 million and the cut in employment social insurance contribution rate of 800. So this is the cost of reforms. The net outcome of reforms, the extra public money which is going to be generated by these changes. And we suggest that this finances a social support scheme. It is used to abolish the charges in electricity bill, which is used in order to lower the cost for the low-income families, because this can be financed through the budget and not through the company. We suggest a property tax deduction of mild proportions and the abolition of the vocational tax, which creates a lot of complications without too much benefit of it. And this is a balanced tax proposal which we make. An important consequence of that is that the employees are going to face two effects. One effect is going to be the reduction in the social contribution rate, but also they are going to face the increase in the tax allowance. Our simulation finds that this actually compensates each other. So this is going to be the fall in wage incomes without the adjustment of social security rates. By cutting the tax allowance threshold, employees are going to face an income loss which is about 6% on an annual basis. But actually, all of them, almost all of them, compensate fully if this change of the tax allowance threshold is accompanied by a reduction in social insurance contribution. So, finally, I think that we are in a position to present a new type of policy mix, a policy which is not based anymore on exclusively accumulating high fiscal surpluses in order to keep debt serviceable, but we use part of it, a substantial part of it, in order to generate growth. This growth is going to stabilize debt and reduce the gross financial needs in the future. Secondly, we suggest that we cut social insurance rates in order to increase the incentives for registered employment increase, and we also suggest to reorganize the tax system in a balanced way without any further fiscal repercussions in order to make it simpler, more efficient, and more converging to the European average. As we can see, I think that this proposal is clearly departing from the philosophy which has imposed Greece over the last 10 years. But I think that only if we do such a turn in fiscal policy, we can avoid the repetition of the fruitless actions which we took in the last 10 years to insist on reforms and on discipline and all these type of things. But if growth is not inside, everything is going to prove to be futile once more. And I think that this could be highly regrettable, especially for the generation of young people who will not have any serious incentives to remain in Greece. Thank you.
next month.
Yes, I'll bring some from here. Okay, so thanks a lot for having me here to discuss this very interesting proposal. So just in terms of background, as probably all of you know, or most of you know, Greece exited the third bailout agreement a few months ago in August. So for the first time since 2010, economic policy is going to be decided primarily by Greek policymakers. Presumably that's a good thing. Now, this creates both opportunities and challenges for these policymakers. So we have to now think, as a sovereign country again, in a way, how to decide on economic policies that are both beneficial to the country, but also respect the constraints, both that we have undertaken vis-à-vis the EU, but also the constraints imposed to us by markets. So hopefully we can do it this time, because 10 years ago that was clearly not there, and that led to the crisis. So the authors of this paper present an ambitious set of proposals about how to improve policy making in Greece. So I'm going to if I were to make a one-line summary of their proposals, I would group them into categories. So there is a macroeconomic proposal which suggests that we change the policy mix, the fiscal policy mix, so to encourage growth, which is also going to improve debt sustainability. Okay, so this is basically the fiscal expansion that was mentioned around the middle of the talk. And then there's a second set of proposals that I would label the structural proposals, which have to do with reforming the tax and the social insurance system. And the main aim of those proposals is to make work pay. I guess that would be sort of a politician's slogan, a political slogan, and also to improve employment. Okay, that would be sort of the main focus of those reforms. So what I want to do now is I want to give you my reading of those reforms and give you my reading of what are the kind of the problems that they're trying to correct. And I think my take is, it's not going to be identical to what was just presented, so hopefully that's helpful for you as well. And I will also try to give some constructive criticism to some of the proposals that we just saw. So I'm going to start in reverse order, and I'm going to start with the tax and the social insurance system. Okay, so Greece is taxed very heavily and very inefficiently. So why do I say heavily? So as we just saw, the tax revenues in Greece right now equal the Eurozone average. This means that actually the average Greek is taxed very heavily, because right now Greece is at a very low level of economic activity. Okay, so you would expect an economy that's booming to generate a lot of tax revenues, and vice versa for an economy which is in an economic depression like Greece is right now. So the fact that Greece is generating so much, such high tax revenues, suggests it is overtaxed. Now, one slightly strange feature here is that if you look at income taxes, for example, a very low proportion of total taxes is generated by income taxes. And this is strange, because tax rates, the proportion of income you have to pay for taxes, are actually very, very high in Greece. So right now, the highest rate, 45%, kicks in at €40,000, which is about £36,000. By comparison, in the UK, 45% is also the highest rate, but it kicks in at £150,000. Okay, so in Greece, actually, you get taxed very highly, very quickly. At the other end, you actually have a very high personal allowance right now. So untaxed, you can earn up to, as we just saw, €9,600 without paying any tax. So basically, you have, you pay no tax for a long time, and then suddenly you start paying very high taxes. Okay, so there's a very small set of people that pay a lot of taxes in Greece. Okay, additionally, Greece has the highest VAT rate, so VPR, in the inflation and tax avoidance in Greece. And that's particularly that's made particularly more salient because we have a very large proportion of self-employment in Greece. So about one third of workers are self-employed versus about 10 to 15% in most European countries. So here's actually one graph from the paper, which I thought was very interesting. So this is for self-employed people. This is their self-reported income. Now, self-employed, they report their own income, so they have much bigger ability to tax evade. That's true in every country, not just Greece. It's just an increase that there's a lot more of them. So in 2015, this finish from 2015, during that year, the tax threshold to enter a higher bracket was 50,000 euros. So what you see in this graph is the number of self-employed reporting each, 45, 46,000, etc. income. And then as you hit this threshold right above it, you know, the number just decreases discontinuously. I mean, this suggests that people actually choosing, really, you know, they have some income, then they choose how much they would like to report. Okay. So this is just one snippet here of information, but I think there's a lot of evidence like that of this sort. Okay, now, just the final thing that I want to mention here, and then I'll move to the proposal, is that this situation here is problematic for both for equity and efficiency reasons. So, if we talk about equity, first of all, so these high tax rates, as was mentioned, discourage, encourage informality. So in Greece, unlike saying the UK, it's much harder to do this in the UK. In Greece, it's actually quite easy to work informally. So you don't declare that you work to the authorities, so you don't pay taxes and your employer does not pay taxes. Okay. So maybe at that point it looks like a good idea, both for you and your employer. But at the end of the day, it's actually a bad deal, especially for workers, okay? Because they're typically uninsured. They do not have any protections of the labor code and so on. Okay, so low, and this is much more prevalent towards the low end. Okay, so that's actually harmful towards low-income workers. Now, on the other end, so there's a small share of taxpayers that bear a disproportionate burden here. And these are not necessarily high-income people. These are high-wage workers. So these are workers who are working at another firm who have an employer, and therefore are paid in wages. There's a lot of high-income people in Greece who are self-employed, and they simply do not report their income. And those guys are not taxed. So this system essentially creates redistribution from wage workers, wage earners, towards the self-employed. Now, this is particularly problematic because if you think about how to generate growth in Greece, you need successful firms to become larger. Okay? So you cannot grow with self-employed workers a whole economy. Okay? So in order to, for example, to have a lot of exports and things like that, you need large firms. Large firms need employees, and they need to pay the employees well to be successful. Okay? This system makes that very, very difficult. So you have a double disincentive to growth due to this tax system. Not only do you have high taxes, which in general can act as a disincentive for work, on top of that, you create a disincentive, particularly for the type of firms that Greece right now needs to help in order to get out of the crisis. Okay, so that's a summary of sort of the problem. Now, what are the proposals? I'm going to go very briefly on the proposals because they were explained just now. Okay, so in terms of the income tax, greatly simplify the tax system, reduce the number and the level of tax rates. And also, importantly, to reduce the personal allowance by about a third. So this has already been legislated. If you follow politics in Greece, you're probably aware that there's a lot of discussion of perhaps reversing this decline in the personal allowance. In addition to that, the authors propose that the social insurance contributions are reduced actually quite substantially. Now, what's the overall effect of this reform? So, first of all, it is revenue neutral. Okay, so the point is not to raise more money or less money. Okay, you want to raise the same amount of money, but to do it in a different way. So, what is this different way? So, the proposals, I think the substance of them is to shift the tax burden away from wage income, away from work, or from taxing work. So, how do you do that? So, actually, the after-tax income of wage worker goes up. So, as we just saw, there's two effects. there's a negative effect from debit use allowance. Okay? If you put the two on the scale, it turns out positive. Okay? So wage workers do not lose from this this reform. Who does lose? Well, people who have other sources of income, okay, but do not pay social security contributions. These other people, they lose their allowance, okay, but there's no countervailing effect. So what could that be? So people whose income is cut mostly from rents, I think. And so I think rents right now are including the individual tax bill, okay, and other such sources. Okay. So this is a redistribution of the tax burden. In addition to that, so as far as, let's say, the self-employed are concerned, you have a reduced ability for tax evasion because right now, in order to pay no taxes, you have to report a very, very low income, so below 5,600 euros. And there are other reasons to sort of suggest whether your income is above that. So, for example, if you own a car, if you consume certain goods, then your income is assessed to be above some threshold. Okay, so it's not like the self-employed now will shift from declaring 10,000 euros to declaring 5,000 euros. That's not very easy to do. Okay, so the additional benefit of reducing the allowance is that you're going to tend to tax some people who've been evading it. Overall, this reform encourages the participation to the labor market because it reduces what economists call the tax wage. Okay, so how much of what employers pay is taken by the government as opposed to the actual worker. And the authors estimate 400,000 new jobs will be created because of that. So I said this is a very positive step. You know, the 400,000 estimation, you can discuss whether we think it's accurate or not, but I think this is a step in the right direction. Especially, it encourages employment, encourages participation in the labor market, which is crucial to counter population aging. Now, here, this one side issue that I wanted to say is that the population risk is aging. This does not necessarily mean that the number of workers increased has to decline. Okay. So even before the crisis, where a lot of people were working, there were still large pools of potential workers which were untapped in Greece. So in particular, young people worked at much lower rates than they did in other countries. Women worked at lower rates than other countries. And people got to retire very, very early. Okay. So around 50 or 55 years old, many people. So if you change in this sense of policy, if governments from now on implement a set of policies to encourage labor force participation for groups like that, okay, this type of policies is one element, there's others, then you can counter population aging. All right, so this is the structural set of reforms. Now, let me move to the main, to the other set of reforms that have to do with the macroeconomic policy mix. So I think there's two major macroeconomic challenges facing Greece. So addressing the threat to debt burden and restarting growth. So the authors do a thorough analysis to demonstrate that the debt burden actually is not sustainable right now. Okay, so we saw a lot of these. I'm not going to go into details here. I want to say a few things about the difficulty of restarting growth. What is true about Greece is that a lot of structural reforms have actually happened since the crisis started. And these were not just window dressing. Okay? So a lot of things have changed positively for the structure of the economy. However, economic performance is still very weak, which creates a little bit of a puzzle how those two things can coincide. Okay? So what this suggests that the structural reforms by themselves are not sufficient for getting the economy started. Once the economy gets started, these reforms will mean that the economy will run better. Okay? But for some reasons right now, the economy is stuck at a low level. Okay? So we have to do something for that. And that requires a significant and discrete policy change with respect to what's done right now. Okay? So what I want to be clear about is that we should not say that those structural reforms were for nothing or that they were not necessary. Okay, they were necessary, and we should have done them. We should do more about them, but they're not sufficient. Okay, so what's the proposal? The authors propose the following. They propose a substantial and sustained increase in public expenditures of about 1.5 to 2% of GDP. So the same tax revenue, but a lower targeted primary surface. So the predicted outcome, as we just saw, is that the growth is going to increase from about 1%, 1.5%, that's the current projection for the long run, to about 3 to 4%, again, over the next few decades. Under these assumptions, that becomes sustainable, and essentially this is a self-financing change, okay? Because, so why do our creditors require Greece to have all these very high surpluses? Because they want their debt to be, to the Greek debt to be repaid. Okay? According to this proposal, debt is going to be repaid not through high surpluses, but because the economy is going to grow faster. Okay? That's sort of the substance here. Okay, so I have two comments about this proposal. So the first is a somewhat technical comment. So the predicted effect of the policy seems quite large to me. In particular, right now, okay, an increase in public expenditure, I think it is likely to have a big response, as the authors assume it will, because right now the economy is in a depressed state, and you have a lot of, for example, a lot of unemployed workers, a lot of idle workers, and so on. So you can put those guys to work, and that's going to be helpful. If, however, this policy is successful, eventually you're not going to be able to do this so easily. So suppose we start this policy today. In 5 years from now, the economy is going to be at a much better state. At that point, spending more public money, I don't think it's going to be that successful as it is now. Okay, so I have a technical question about whether, you know, the actual numbers here hang on together. I also have a conceptual comment. So I'm going to take a particular interpretation of this public expenditure. So the authors here, in their paper, are not, they talk about public expenditure in general, which could take many forms. Okay. Then in their estimates, for the effect that they use public investment as an example. So if we take public, that this means that the policy means we should increase public investment by that much. This means that if we try to institute growth driven by domestic demand, so spending inside the country, I think that pushes the economy in the wrong direction. Okay. So before the crisis, this is exactly what Greece had been doing for a long time. A lot of money was being spent within Greece, financing. Some of it was productive investment, some of it was, a lot of it was consumption, okay, which generated these large deficits that we saw in the beginning. Right now, basically, the big challenge is to reallocate productive capacity from the domestic market towards the exporting market. Okay, this is how the economy is going to get out of the crisis. This policy here, generating domestic demand, I don't think it does. It could be part of the solution, but that's not the main thing. And furthermore, it would lead to a deterioration of the trade balance, because if the domestic economy starts doing better, let's say because of more construction, then we're going to be importing more things because we're going to be consuming more things. But because construction is at the heart of it, we will not be exporting more things. Okay? So it's important to target the right sectors of the economy. Okay, so here's the part that I'd like to see a bit more about. Okay, so I think it would be useful to have some more detail on how best to spend this extra public expenditure. So some public investment, fine. How much? Okay. So do we have an idea of very serious bottlenecks in the economy? So one could say, for example, that helping the evolution of the Piraeus port to become a hub for all of Europe or something like that is important, and we need public investment for that. Fine. Can we spend 2% of GDP for 30 years or things like that? I'm not sure we have that many high return projects. So I think it is crucial that we look at private sources of spending to help those, in particular private investment. So is it possible to use this kind of fiscal space to either co-finance productive private investment? How to do that without generating more corruption? Perhaps incentivize banks to help more for investment purposes. Okay, for things that we think are productive. Okay, so things like taxes or investments. Okay, so I think this is where we needed a little bit more detail about how to best reallocate, reform the policy. Okay, so I'm way over time, so I'll stop here.
Thank you. Many thanks. Thank you, Manali, very much indeed. We don't have so much time, so with your permission, I'm going to include questions, and then I'm going to give both of our speakers the opportunity of responding at the very end. So could you just say qui wa and go to the questions, please? Who'd like to ask the first question?
The only thing, excuse me, Kevin, that I'd like to ask you is to speak in this microphone, because I have a hearing problem.
There is a microphone.
We've got a separate room. There's a special room.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry about that. There, perhaps you can use both of them, but definitely mine in order to get questions. Otherwise, I cannot get questions.
Okay, that's good.
Sorry about that.
No problem. Biggest question was comments, reactions. That's it. Comments or the questions, please. Could I ask a simple, small political science question? Your model assumes that the tax burden will be shifted. You assume efficient institutions to be able to do that. Wasn't that how we got into the problem in the first place, that institutions are not sufficient in collecting taxes? Can we assume that increasing personal income tax will be something which the public administration can just do? Okay, this question. And please say, yeah.
Related to that, the question of investment is the most crucial of all the items that I mentioned. A very ambitious program for which I'm very grateful. Of GDP additional. When the Greek state has been unable to absorb the funds that were emanating from Europe, how is it that it will be able to do it
Thanks. Other comments or other questions before we close? Going, gone. Who would like to respond first?
Yeah. First of all, let me thank very much Manolis for his very vocal comments he made and also several suggestions. In fact, I think that in certain aspects his comments were better than my presentation, and I'm going to use them in future seminars. Let me say the following, that the main point of my talk was that we cannot achieve a sustainable debt plus the other employment targets and these sort of things with a low growth rate in the future. This is the main point. And the only way in which I can see feasible is to change the policy mix. But this does not necessarily mean that every change in policy is going to be demand-oriented. It can very well be supply-oriented. For example, when I talk to use the 2% of GDP every year in order to finance public investment, it does not necessarily mean bridges or construction projects or those type of things. For example, very well, this 2% of GDP can go in order to finance private investment, reduce taxation for a while in order to give incentives for foreign capital to come to Greece, create industrial zones or supply side infrastructure, finance the so-called fourth industrial transformation in a way similar to that applied here in the UK and all these type of things. The 2% GDP, which is cut away from the private sectors in order to go to the production, can find several channels in order to raise growth, not necessarily through demand. I'm afraid that if you do not include this public infrastructural component and you only rely on tax deductions, as some politicians say, I'm afraid that this is going to be a fully demand-oriented policy. And there is a great danger to lead in the reappearance of current account imbalances and these sort of things. Of course, Yanis's point is absolutely crucial, that we are in a state of things where we cannot absorb efficiently the European funds which are available, despite a very long experience which presumably should have been the case all these years. Greece, for example, has a very low position in financing the cohesion funds which are taken from the European Union. And even after 5 years of the proper implementation, we are still have absorbed something like 25% or something like that. So we are very low at that. So how can we imagine that we are in a position to finance an extra 2% of GDP every year? Okay, I admit that this task seems to be Herculean. But there's another way. That's why I have proposed, and there are some more details in the study, that the European Union helps us. Instead of going and checking all the fiscal situation every month in every possible aspect, most of the times without such efficiency, I think it would be better to help us in order to design a substantial infrastructure upgrading, new projects, combinations of PPP, public and private partnerships, and all these type of things. So I think that we shall need some foreign surveillance of that, but at least this time we can pick it up to be on the implementation side of productive projects, not anymore of supervision and dictation on how money has to be collected and spent. I wouldn't mind admitting that it has a demand side as well. But I think that demanding the aggregate demand increase should be augmented because we suffer sufficient aggregate demand. We have a banking system which is great. Its capacity to lend companies is very low, and there is no physical date in which the full capacity is going to be restored. So I think we need to establish some extra sources of investment financing in Greece. Regarding the remark made by Kevin on the efficiency of institutions in order to achieve this tax reform, I agree with you, but I know very well that the more complicated the system is and the more cases it handles, then this is more likely to make the system more inefficient. And I strongly believe that we can increase efficiency by simplifying things, by having lower coefficients, lower exceptions, and lower cases to supervise. I think that we can thus create a sort of economic scale in institutional inspection and operation, and we also, by reducing the incentives to evade taxation, as Manuel is showed in the graphs, I think we can arrive at a system which works better, not only from the economic point of view, but also from the institutional point of view. Thank you. Natalie?
Okay, I don't have much to add, really. So I agree with Nikos that, so demand management should be a part of this, of the change in the policy mix. So I think at least in the short term that seems necessary. Just a small comment I wanted to make on what Kevin asked about shifting the tax burden. So if we have a revenue neutral reform, then you would need exactly a very efficient political system to take it through. You could make that not necessarily a revenue neutral. You could basically leave some money on the table, so to speak, reduce tax revenues by, let's say, I don't know, pick your favorite number, 0.5% of GDP or something like that, to bribe some people to come along. If you can get all the wage earners to be supportive of the change, you know, they outnumber the self-employed, for example. I don't want to bash on the self-employed or something. But that would be sort of my quick and dirty response to how do you actually implement this in practice.
Thank you very much indeed. So we finish with the idea that tax revenue is a kind of poker game in relation to different sections of the population. Wonderful. I'm sure Northern Europeans will be delighted to hear that. I didn't wish to finish on that negative note. Can I just mention the next event in our Climate Observatory series, and that is on Tuesday, the 6th of November. Dr. Spiros Kosmidis, lecturer from the University of Oxford, will be taking up a kind of political science aspect of what we've just been discussing. The title is The Political Consequences of Intergenerational Inequality in Greece. Highly topical. So that's in 2 weeks' time in our usual... Sorry? 1 week's time, because we've changed the clocks. It's in 1 week's time, next Tuesday, on the 6th of November, in CAU 111 here at the LSE. Can I give my very sincere personal thanks to both Nikos and Manolis for their excellent discussion and presentation.